5544. Thank you. So at this point, why don't we bring up Ms. Baker, well, she's here, Mr. Jester and Ms. Gilbert, and then would you like to make some opening comments?
Certainly. I'm not sure what your procedure is in this subcommittee. I did hand out to members on Tuesday our recommendations for actions on this budget bill that covered the individual policy packages, other adjustments that we would propose. There is a budget note, and then a discussion of the performance measures with some recommendations on those. So if you want to walk through that memo, you can do that.
Why don't we?
Okay. Dated May 8th. Dated May 8th, yes. So as you can see on the front table there, our legislative fiscal office recommended budget, which reflects the co-chair's budget and some other technical adjustments at this point, is $253,882,448 general fund, $296,250,445 total funds, 1,279 positions, and 1,147.46 full-time equivalent positions. The first page of the memo just sort of sets the context. This is a budget where we have not in the past fully funded up to the demand forecast for the juvenile close custody population or for the community beds. But that does give you some information about what those forecasts project, and then talks a little bit about some of the issues related to that. On the close custody side, you will note that the forecast does actually drop off a little bit in the out years, which is a good thing. And that I note that the population currently, the capacity the agency has, is adequate to house all the mandated sentenced youth, which would include the Measure 11 and waived youth that come through the adult court system, and then the public safety reserve youth, those that would be Measure 11 but are too young. So basically, the balance of the population is the county discretionary bed allocation, where the counties and the agency work together to manage those populations for, I call them lower-level offenders, but they still are serious offenders. And then the community placement beds, I note there, we're currently funded at about 75% of forecast demand level. Again, the longer-term forecast is that demand will drop. In both cases, though, with close custody beds and the community beds, the agency's budget currently doesn't fully fund those forecasts in any case, and wouldn't fully fund the forecast even at the lower levels, but it does get closer. And then I summarize what the governor's budget did there in terms of adding beds, both close custody and community, increasing grant funding, enhancing facility staffing, provide some technical assistance staff, and fund some capital construction projects, as the agency discussed. So then on the top of page 2, I've summarized our recommendations, and I won't repeat those, because as we go through, I think this will become clear to you. So starting in with the facilities programs budget there, towards the bottom middle of the page, it shows the policy packages, and it gives a brief description of each, where the governor's budget policy package funding was, and then the legislative fiscal office recommendation. As you may recall, in this budget, the way it's built is that the essential budget level includes funding to the full forecast demand level. So what the governor's budget does and what our recommended budget does is to reduce funding from that full forecast level. So you see negatives there, but I've tried to describe the net impact, which in the case of the facility programs is to add 145 beds and 161 positions related to those beds phased in during the 07-09 biennium over the 850 beds they have now. So we recommend approval of that package. Package 103 adds some staffing to bring the older facilities, McLaren and Hillcrest primarily, up to the levels of the regional youth correctional facilities in terms of nursing and psychiatric resources primarily. It also, in the governor's budget, funded full shift coverage on holidays. The agency has in the past short-staffed on holidays to some extent to conserve their resources in terms of holiday pay. The co-chair's budget doesn't fund that $1.1 million for holiday pay, so we've removed that from our recommendation. The rest of the governor's budget package, the 10 positions and 12.5 FTE, we are recommending that you approve. Okay, package 104 on the top of page 3. This is the package that adds resources for gender-specific evidence-based programs for young women. It included the qualified mental health professional position, some capital outlay for modifications to the Oak Creek facility in Albany, which would be reopened in the governor's budget, and then some training related to cultural and gender-specific services for staff and that are working with the young women. We would recommend approval of that package, except that we would shift the $65,000 capital outlay from this package to the capital improvements budget. So it's coming out here. It's going in later in the capital improvements budget. It's a technical kind of adjustment that we LFO people love to make. But it doesn't affect the total resources available to the agency for that purpose. Package 105, this was a net increase of about $765,000 general fund to address higher medical and pharmacy costs. The agency initially identified a $1 million cost increase related to this, but they negotiated some contract savings. So this is the net additional need, and that is recommended in the budget before you. And then package 801, you'll see this in several places in this recommendation. It's a federal fund shift. Federal revenues are expected to be down from where they were projected to be in the governor's budget. Two reasons. One is that the agency uses federal Medicaid funds for some services to the youth, particularly community programs. But the federal Medicaid match rate, the share that the feds will pay, is established every year based on a formula that takes into account how Oregon's economy is doing relative to the rest of the nation. And our economy is doing slightly better than it was relative to the rest of the nation, so the feds have recalculated that and are expecting to pay a little less, and that means we need to pay a little more of the services that are provided. So this is a federal fund shift related to that and to the fact that the agency is projecting that fewer youth will meet the income eligibility for Medicaid services than they had initially estimated. So the issues I've noted for the facility programs then is basically the phase-in cost of bringing the new beds online during this biennium, carrying them for a full 24 months, assumedly, in the 07-09 budget. Because they're phased in beginning in December of this year, and then the later beds come online in February of 09, you have a relatively smaller cost this biennium, and it will cost about an additional $11 million in the 09-11 budget to fund those for the full 24 months. Moving on to community programs. Okay. The community programs budget, on the top of page 4, I tried to identify the various elements of this budget because it's more diverse in terms of expenditures than some of the other areas. And I won't necessarily go through this with you unless you have questions on it, but it does show where they are for the legislatively approved budget, what the governor's budget recommended, and then the Legislative Fiscal Office recommended budget there. And you can see that the change are primarily in residential foster care and individualized services in the Multnomah County youth gang funding, statewide county youth gang grants. the juvenile crime prevention and county diversion grants, and then the technical assistance staff. And I'll talk about those in more detail in the packages. But this was to give you an idea of how those laid out within this community programs budget. So the policy package, again, the 090 package, reduces the essential budget level funding based on that demand forecast to a level where there is still a net additional 73 community beds phased in during the biennium and additional staffing related to parole and probation. So we would recommend approval of that package. Package 201, partnering with counties, the co-chairs made some shifts in that funding as well as a reduction in the funding levels overall, and I've tried to detail that where it shows package 201 detail. You can see the governor's budget had personal services and supplies related to two positions to provide technical assistance on those county grants. The legislative fiscal office recommendation based on the co-chair's budget is to fund only one of those positions. And also the discussion is to fund it limited duration rather than permanent, which means that they would have to bring it back as a package in the next budget period and demonstrate what that position has been able to accomplish in terms of monitoring those grants and tracking the outcomes at the county and program level. Then the special payments, the governor's budget would have added $1.1 million to the Multnomah County gang funds. The co-chair's budget would not fund that, but would add $1.55 million for statewide competitive gang grants. So similar to the $600,000 that the emergency board approved in December, this would fund for a full biennium $1.55 million for statewide gang funding. And then the juvenile crime prevention and diversion grants piece, instead of adding $4.9 million overall to help bring those back to where they were prior to previous budget cuts, the recommended budget would add $2,355,350 to those grant streams. So there is still an increase. It's about a 15% increase in the juvenile crime prevention and diversion grants money above where they were in 05-07. And then, in addition to those funding adjustments, there is a budget note proposed in terms of the funding for the Multnomah County gang money, directing that is to be distributed by Multnomah County government, and then that the agency is to report back to the next legislature on both the distribution and outcomes of the Multnomah County gang money, similar to how they did this time, and as well the distribution and outcomes of the statewide competitive gang funds, which is a new ongoing funding stream for them.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
A question on the gang funding, because we're talking about probably a plus $52,000 for the entire state versus the $1.1 for Multnomah counties. Was there the thought that Multnomah County's gang issue was diminishing? And
I can fill in a little bit of that. I think the co-chairs felt that the not so much that the Multnomah County gang problems were diminishing, but that they were sprouting up in other parts of the state as well, and that people all across the state should have an opportunity to go for some of those grant dollars.
Mr. Chair, the other piece I would add is that this doesn't reduce what Multnomah County is getting now. They will still get what they got in 05-07 plus a cost of living increase of 3.1%. It's just that where the additional money goes is not allocated to Multnomah County, but is allocated to those statewide grants.
Okay, so Multnomah County is not being reduced.
A slight increase, actually.
Okay.
And has the opportunity, if I may, Mr. Chair, has the opportunity to compete for these additional funds.
That's right.
Just one clarification.
Okay, top of page 5, then package 202. This is the provider rates issue. The residential treatment providers that provide behavioral rehabilitation services as we discussed earlier, the governor's budget would have given them a significant rate increase, basically to get them to a comparable wage based on a rate study from 2005. The co-chair's budget reduced that funding overall and then split it between Oregon Youth Authority and the Department of Human Services so that to the extent that they're accessing the same providers and the same level of treatment services, that their rates are comparable. So you can see what the increase is here. Instead of the $6.6 million in the governor's budget for the Oregon Youth Authority, it's about $2 million general fund and then matching federal funds to that. And what that provides is about a 6% rate increase in addition to the cost of living increase that those providers would otherwise get, compared to the governor's budget level, which would have been, I believe, ranging from 18 to 25% rate increase for those providers.
And then could you also, did you comment about the transfer to DHS?
Where we end up on the transfer to DHS, if I can find the right page, there's a little less, I think it's about $1.5 million or $1.6 million that's going to Department of Human Services and will be matched in their budget for the same percentage increase for those providers, for those beds with those providers that DHS purchases for their use.
And so there's a parity issue, correct, on the, we didn't want the rates for DHS to become out of whack with the rates for OYAs, so some of that money went over to OYAs, as some of you know. And the providers aren't exactly the same, but there's very, very heavy overlap amongst them. Senator Burdick.
Mr. Chair, isn't that in effect moving money out of OYA and into DHS?
Yes.
And I guess that kind of concerns me, to taking an OYA budget and allocating, even though I certainly approve of paying these providers what they're worth, OYA has worked very hard, you know, to prioritize the payment of these providers, and now it's almost as if they're getting penalized for it.
That's interesting.
So noted.
That's an interesting comment.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Ms. Baker, you mentioned it's about a 6% increase on top of a cost of living increase. What would the cost of living increase be approximately?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, the standard cost of living increase that's allocated in the budget is 3.1%. Now, and this will get technical pretty fast, but the 3.1% is a biennial rate that basically is used for budget building purposes. What OYA's budget includes and what the DHS budget also includes is an additional bump, and in this case it's a couple hundred thousand, to get the agency, the cost of living increase will be calculated on an annual basis rather than a biennial basis. So actually it turns out to be a little more than 3.1% over the course of the biennium.
So a brief follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up.
So if it's, for example, 3.2 or 3.5, to that you add 6, so the provider rate would be increasing effectively something more than 9%.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Winters and then Senator Wesson.
Just so I understand, the cost of living, if we talk about 3.1 or 3.2 over the biennium, you're actually talking about 1.55 or something for an annual.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, and Senator Winters, not exactly, but close enough. I've spent a lot of time doing the math on this when I was over at Budget and Management, but
that's
pretty close. Yeah.
Pretty close, because out in the other world, not in this world, they deal with their annual cost of living rather than the biennial. So when we say 3% in the non-state world, if you did ours, it would be 3 point each year, which would be 6.2.
Senator Wesson.
Well, I'm just going to say, and I don't know to what extent these BRS providers, what percentage is contract, but I assume some are state employees as well? Or are these just strictly contract providers?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wesson, they're contract providers.
Okay.
Generally nonprofit agencies.
examples would be Morrison Center, St. Mary's, Janice Youth Programs. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know then what, though, as the math was done by Representative Nathanson, a 9% increase, do we know then yet what the gap would be between that new reimbursement level and what the wage rate study showed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, what this will fund, I believe, is a little less than 30% of what the governor's budget would have funded. So if you, I'm not sure that exactly answers the question, but it covers, I mean, another way to look at it roughly would be it would cover about a third of what's needed to fully get to that 2005 wage rate level.
Just as a clarification, then we could say they're still 66% below their rate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanna, I think you could generally say that.
Thank you.
Was there an actual study similar to what's happening in community corrections to say that this is the basis for this? Or is that correct?
I'd let the agency answer that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Jester, director of the Oregon Youth Authority. There was a Oregon Wage Index study that was done in conjunction with DHS and the provider organization, and the recommended rate increase to get to parity was between 18% and 24%, depending on the level of service that that individual provider was providing.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Jester. When you say to get to parity, could you be clear about parity between?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, in parity, I meant to say to get to the level that the wage index study showed that the reimbursement rate should be.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a it's a small semantic question, but it's actually a very large point. When we talk about 30% or 70%, it's not of the wage that would be paid, it's of the wage gap.
Right.
Is that correct, the wage gap?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, yes, I was thinking that as we were working through it. What this funds is about 30% of the differential that the governor identified as necessary. That is not the same as saying that the providers are getting 30% of what that market rate is.
Let's move on.
Package 801, this is another federal revenue adjustment. This is the largest one because most of their Medicaid funding comes in the community program. So we've used general fund to backfill the projected federal fund shortfall here. And I've identified a couple of issues that we've touched on already, that rate differentials between the Youth Authority and the Department of Human Services, to the extent that they're utilizing the same providers and similar services, can create access issues if there is a disparity. And federal revenue, as we've talked about, shifts depending on eligibility of youth services and the calculations of the federal government in terms of how much of the program they will be supporting. So now we get to the program support pieces, the administrative and central functions of the agency. On top of page 6, we get to the policy packages. Again, similar to the ones in the facilities and community programs, there is an 090 reduction package from the essential budget level piece. This net impact in this particular budget unit is to add 3 support positions during the biennium, and we recommend approval of that package. The next package in the governor's budget added 2 positions for the treatment providers that we just talked about, the behavioral rehabilitation services providers, because of additional, because of changing Medicaid regulations and additional scrutiny, I guess you would call it, of this program on the federal level, the governor's budget included 2 positions to help monitor those providers, help them make sure that the youth and the services are all meeting the standards for the Medicaid reimbursement. The co-chair's budget funds one of those positions, and I think the thinking here was, let's see how much one position can do if the agency needs another position to adequately manage that program, then they can come back in and ask for one at a later date. Then package 400, I'll skip over for a minute. We'll come back to that when we talk about capital construction. Package 801, again, federal funds revenue adjustment affecting this particular piece of the budget. Capital improvement, what you see here is the recommended adjustment that shifts the capital outlay funds that were in package 104 and facility programs into the appropriate place in the budget. So again, no net effect agency-wide, just putting it in the right budget structure. I do note on the top of page 7 that capital improvements is an issue for the agency. The regional youth correctional facilities, although some of us still think of them as new, they're at least 10 years old, and so they are facing some maintenance issues. The other facilities that the agency has are significantly older than that, and so that will continue to be a challenge for them. On capital construction, the $8.6 million in the governor's budget was tied to particular projects that are identified and project approval and expenditure limitation as part of House Bill 5006 rather than this agency's budget bill. As we were preparing the recommendations for the work session, the agency advised me that it had recently gotten some additional information on the cost to renovate its Oak Creek Albany Youth Correctional Facility, and I think we can have the agency speak to those, but given that the capital construction is likely to change from what was presented to this subcommittee and the way it's outlined in the capital construction bill, I thought the best approach at this time was to take out both the costs of issuance that were in this budget, which is in the program support package 400, and the debt service that was in this budget related to that, which is on the last page in package 400, the debt service, to take out that general fund and other funds from this budget at this point until there can be a decision made on the capital construction pieces. And then at that point, the expectation would be that the funding would go into the end of session bill or some other vehicle so that the debt service and the cost of issuance can tie up with the actual projects that the agency would expect to do during the coming biennium.
Did you want to comment on that, Dr. Jester?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the work that LFO and BAM has done at the last minute, really, to incorporate in the recommendations the accommodation of what the Youth Authority sees as absolutely essential renovations to the Oak Creek facility to meet the state standard for equal access for young women, as well as our continued efforts to provide a gender-specific program and environment for girls. The comment I'd like to make is that we did an RFP for an architect to look at the Oak Creek facility as soon as the governor's recommended budget and the co-chair's budget came out. We secured that architect. We actually got the initial work product on May the 3rd, and we pared that down to what we felt was something that we could reasonably do between the 1st of July and December when the young women will begin moving in. And we want to include that within the 8.6 limitation that had already been approved and discussed by this committee. Rather than going into details of that, I'd be happy to answer questions around the work that the architect believes needs to be done at Oak Creek to convert it from a short-term, very secure boys facility to a long-term housing facility for all the young women that we manage in the Youth Authority.
Thank you, Representative Shields. I ended up meeting with Mr. Jester and Mr. Lemon regarding this issue because when Ms. Baker and I had met, I was somewhat concerned about the cost of remodeling, but I am not a you know, techie, geeky budget person, but after meeting with Mr. Jester, I truly believe that these renovation costs are necessary to have a facility that's adequate for young women. And I did offer to Mr. Jester that at least I know Senator Morris and Representative Olson, who represent that area, as well as a number of women in the legislature, would be very interested in working to access private dollars to help soften the image of this particular facility. But it's pretty clear for the amount of dollars they need to spend that we're getting a lot of bang for our buck in terms of the renovation. So, and I really appreciate Mr. Jester's leadership on this issue. We've waited a long time for this facility, and I'm glad we're finally able to move forward on it.
Thanks, Senator. Let's keep moving unless you had anything else you want to add.
Okay. So then, related to that, as I indicated, policy package 400, debt service, our recommendation is not to fund that at this time. I did identify the issue, though, that as with any capital construction projects where you're phasing in the project's expenditures and the project financing through certificates of participation, as you're phasing that in during the biennium, the debt service costs will roll up, and if the full $8.6 million in capital construction expenditures are indeed put into place as expected, then there will be additional both debt service and cost of issuance ongoing for some time. So just wanted to make sure that was noted. So then on the top of page 9...
Excuse me, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Chair. Sheila, do you know those costs? The cost of issuance and the debt service roll-up?
The cost of issuance, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, the cost of issuance that they had identified for this current biennium are shown on page 6 in package 400, and that's the $999 other funds. And then the debt service is on page 8, the $580,476. Now, the costs of issuance are a one-time thing,
okay,
and are when you issue the COPs, you pay the investment bankers, you pay people to set up accounts, you pay for the distribution of the materials, the sales costs are all wrapped into that, and that's a one-time piece. The debt service, of course, is ongoing until those COPs are paid off. The $580,000 here, I noted, would roll up to $1.1 million next biennium, and then it stays pretty steady over the course of the certificates of participation. So if they're 10-year certificates of participation, then that's a five-biennium obligation.
And I'm sorry, I got a little bit behind you on that. I saw the policy option faction 400, the other place, the $580,000 showing the debt service.
Right, that's on page 8. That's the policy package in the debt service structure. So the
okay, thank you.
And I will note that those are estimates based on the timing of the sale, the interest rates that are expected, and those can change over time. Usually, I think BAM has been pretty good about their estimates being very close to where they come in terms of actuals, but rates go up, rates go down. On the top of page 9, then, is our proposed amendments to Senate Bill 5544, deleting the numbers that were in the original budget bill and inserting the numbers that reflect our recommendations there. I won't go through those unless you have questions on that. I will note that their general fund appropriation is that reflects three different pieces. So their general operating budget is the first number, the $246 million. The $6.6 million is the recommendation for debt service, and then the $715,000 is the recommendation for capital improvements. And again, the debt service amount, assuming approval of the capital construction projects and inclusion of debt service in another bill, that would increase at that time from that other vehicle. But these are the recommendations for the current budget bill that's in front of you. And then other funds and federal funds are there as indicated.
Representative Hammond.
Thank you. Ms. Baker, the 715-370, you mentioned that's the deferred...
That's the capital improvements piece. So capital improvements are short-term projects less than $500,000.
And that's not a total of any of the policy option packages, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, it includes the $65,000 that was in package 104 for the young women's programming. It does not include the capital construction piece that we just talked about in terms of needing to add that to reopen that facility and make it really work for young women.
Can I follow up, please? So the $65,000 is part of the $715,000.
Yes.
The remainder of that are the projects that we discussed earlier in review of the maintenance projects?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, yes, the agency presented a list of capital improvement projects.
Would you like to comment on that,
Justin? Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I appreciate you mentioning those projects. The work that we presented before this committee that we prioritize as needing to be done will still need to be done. And although we do not believe that we need additional limitation during this coming budget period, during the 09-11 session, we would to complete these projects. And so it would be our intention to come back in 09-11 and ask for the necessary limitation and COP funding to complete the projects that we had previously discussed and presented to the committee.
Hello.
Thank you. So that I think I understand this right, even though the 715 includes the $65,000 that's part of the policy option package for the women's facility, it does not complete the projects as presented earlier in terms of you're deferring those to a later time period. Is that correct?
I can take a stab at it. Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I think the answer is that the agency has a long list of capital improvements that it can do. In addition to the funding in this capital improvements budget, part of the capital construction funding was to address some of those deferred maintenance needs as well. So it becomes a question of which projects are capital improvements and which are capital construction. And I think that the bottom line answer is that this $715,000 plus whatever they do for deferred maintenance through capital construction, that combination does not fully address their full list. They will prioritize that list.
Thank you. I think that's a more clear understanding for the committee that it does not fund everything. They have reprioritized a list of items that were necessary.
Would you like to continue?
Okay. Moving from numbers then to performance measures, the agency, as it went through its budget hearings, talked about performance measures with you, talked about the proposed changes that I've identified there in various bullets. So unless there are questions on those, I won't necessarily go through them individually. I will call your attention to the bottom of page 9. Our recommendation is that you approve the requested performance measures and the targets. And I would note that some of those targets are very ambitious in terms of increasing performance relative to this biennium into the next biennium. But I would recommend that those targets be approved, and that we would further recommend that despite the agency's response to legislative direction in the past on performance measures 1 through 5, where they've gone from percentages in some cases to numbers, I think the agency needs to relook at those and come up with performance measures that are more outcome-oriented and not just reporting numbers. But I would suggest that they have the interim to do that and then come back into the next session with measures that better describe its performance rather than just reporting numbers. And then in some areas they have not been able to identify comparisons of their performance with other states, and we would recommend that they continue to work on that during the biennium as well.
Do we need more detail on the individual key performance measures, or should we move on? Move on? Okay.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, those are our recommendations, and on the top of page 10, we would recommend that approving our package of recommendations and then move that the bill be amended as approved and reported out to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, do you want to go through this and move the performance measures and then the amended budget lines into 5544?
I will take Ms. Baker's recommendation on how we proceed.
You can do it separately or you can do it as a package.
Let's do it separately then if you'd like.
Mr. Chair, I move the key performance measures as recommended by Legislative Fiscal Office into Senate Bill 5544.
Senator Westland has moved the performance measures.
Mr. Chair, to be technically correct, the performance measures as such don't go into Senate Bill 5544. They are attached to the budget report, however.
Okay. I think I'm going to perhaps back us up. We're not in the middle of the motion, then, are we?
I will withdraw my motion,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
I think rather than doing it piecemeal, why don't we, for simplicity's sake, if there's no objection, do the final subcommittee action, and then we can have some discussion, unless people would like to proceed in a different way. It doesn't really matter to me, but it just might be a little simpler.
Would you like another motion now?
Sure. Either one of you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations as presented by staff into Senate Bill 5544. As delineated, would you like me to delineate them? You just want the whole thing?
I think, yeah, if you could just read the final subcommittee action.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5544 be amended as approved and reported out to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland has moved Senate Bill 5544 be amended as approved and reported out to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate greatly the agency being open for all the time they spent explaining issues, answering questions. This is my second session with them, and I've gotten to know them, and I appreciate their forthright work and so forth. Again, because of the process by which the co-chairs have chosen to move forward and the chair of this committee, my chips don't count here. And for that, I'm upset, but I just want to make clear that I don't have the opportunity to help you in a way that I would in terms of chips to different areas. I think your provider rate issue still needs further resolution, as does your deferred maintenance project list. With that, I wish you very well with this budget. I will be a no on this budget based on the process by which we're moving forward.
Very good. Further discussion. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to try to hold up this budget, but I just wanted to voice my objection to the movement of money from OIA to DHS on the provider rates, but also express my strong support for adequate provider rates. That's not the source of my objection. The source of my objection is this is an agency which has prioritized this within their budget and now is being penalized, and someone else is getting the benefit of the improvements that they have made in their treatment of providers. And I just There just seems to be a fundamental unfairness about that, and I just wanted to register my objection to that particular thing on the record.
So noted. Senator Winters.
I'm not going to hold up the budget, but I share the same concerns. One, this agency has done an incredible job under the leadership of Mr. Jester. And the provider rates is one that, and the parity issue is a critical issue. And it's one that we really, truly need to address in this building. I don't know how long we're going to be able to continue to ask our partners to take less. And they've proven they came to us and they presented their case, and I think their case is valid. The other one is the deferred maintenance issue, and I would have to agree with Representative Hanna. And I would also ask that Mr. Jester present us with the list. He's already prioritized, but present us later with the list of what he is not able to do based on need, because I think that we consistently do this, and at some point we complain about the federal government penalizing us when we do good. And here we have a situation where an agency is doing the job that we have asked them to do, and yet they're being penalized. And so I just wanted to go on record that I think that we support the work that they're doing, and I know that Mr. Jester and staff have been doing an incredible job out there with the young people. So,
thank you, Senator Winters. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since this is the culmination of several months of hearings, and this is probably the last time in this kind of setting that we'll see Mr. Jester and the agency, I wanted to make a few comments also about the budget and about what we've been hearing. I want to begin by saying there's something that impressed me so much with the presentation several weeks ago that I didn't want to go unnoticed today. In the key performance measures, the data for 12, performance measures 12 and 13, it was extremely impressive to me to look at the success that Oregon is achieving compared to other states. We have a measure on youth paroled from an OIA youth correctional facility during the fiscal year, and the adjudication or conviction within a certain number of months. In other words, this is a recidivism measure, and the one is on parole and one is on probation. Our numbers are so far below the U.S. average, and they're below what some of our other states are, that I want to commend the agency and say I hope that with this kind of a budget you can keep doing what you've been doing. It obviously works. This is wonderful news for us. That was something that was on page 24 of our presentation. I just was very pleased to see that. I wanted to quickly add also that I'm glad that we are able to it may not be everything that was requested, but to show an increase through a policy package for staffing, safety, and security, adding also in another package, adding resources for services for young women. The two things that I hope, if there is additional money, since others have stated their priorities, I want to join you in saying that it's also a high priority for me to do better on the provider rates, but also for me, I don't want to leave without saying that we need to do better on partnering with counties, that shared or collaboration that we do. Package 201 wasn't everything that had been hoped, and so that would be another priority of mine.
Senator Westland, and then Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of big picture observations. The first is that if you look at the gross numbers in this budget, they represent approximately a 20% increase over the 0507 appropriation. And while I know that doesn't, satisfy every need, and that there are still issues that must be addressed, particularly in the capital construction as it relates to the women's facility and the BRS providers. Specifically with regard to the providers, this is one of the least acknowledged and most overlooked areas in all of the state's delivery system. I mean, you look at our private youth system, the Christie School, Trillium, the DD community, Shangri-La, Central Oregon Opportunity Center. The list goes on and on and on. How we underfund our private providers in this state. So, until this state can somehow figure out a way, to break out of the fact that we have the 47th lowest revenue in all 50 states, and we can dismiss and break through the denial that we're a high-fee state, we are not. We're about in the middle of the pack. We are going to continue to fund these budgets commensurate with that level of revenue. That's where we are today. And a lot of it says, I wish it weren't so, but that's where we are, and that's the reality we're faced with. I'm getting the hook from my good Senate colleague, so
perhaps you can tell us what your pen says.
And I call attention to this red blob on my... I didn't go there. I was being a good little boy. Mr. Chair, are you ready for a real motion?
Almost. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief so I don't get the hook. I just want to compliment the agency and say what a great job in the presentation and the follow-up and just keeping us informed on what your priorities were and how we could help you. And I just want to know that this is just a big picture thing that we're going to pass $253 million general fund budget, and I don't know how that fits. Here we are in May. I don't know exactly how much money we're going to spend and another $253 million comes in, whether we have enough or not. I don't want to sit here and argue about the amount we have, but we have a certain amount of money to spend. And so I'll be a no vote on this budget because I don't know how it fits in the overall picture of the whole process. And thank you.
Very good. Representative Parker.
Thank you. I'll even be briefer. I just want to thank Mr. Jester and your group for getting this Oak Creek thing online. I think it's just vital that young women have a separate place to be, and I really appreciate your efforts in getting that done.
Great. Thank you. I believe Senator Wesson wants to amend his motion.
Mr. Chair, third time's a charm. I would like to amend my current motion and approve the key performance measures and the amendments to Senate Bill 5544 outlined in the LFO memo dated May 8, 2007.
Senator Westland has made a motion, and I think what we'll do is do a roll call vote just because of the objections.
Okay. Senator Westland?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
Aye.
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Hanna?
No.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Chair Shields?
Aye. Motion passes. And Mr. Jester, I also wanted to add that I've been really impressed with your presentation here, particularly your compliance and interest in moving Senate Bill 267 forward. I also hope you'll work with the Department of Corrections on their performance measure about surveying inmates' families, and we look forward to working with you and finding out more about your great work. Would you like to make any closing comments?
Chair?
He still has another motion.
Now the amended version of 5544 before us, I would like to move that we move Senate Bill 5544 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
It's always good to have the veterans around to keep me on track.
Roll call?
Yes, so moved. Let's do a roll call on that as well.
Senator Wessler?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
Aye.
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Hanna?
No.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Chair Shields?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Motion passes. I can now close
carriers.
The works. Yeah, carriers. This is a Senate bill for who would like to carry it. Senator Wessler will carry it in full and on the floor and on the House side. Representative Nathanson, would you be the one to carry that? All right. And now we can go to closing comments.
Yes.
Any closing comments, Mr. Jester?
Mr. Chair, with the fear of getting the hook from Senator Brown, I would just like to thank the committee and particularly recognize the work that Legislative Fiscal Office did in helping get this budget moving, as well as the Office of Budget Management. And I appreciate very much the comments by Representative Nathanson and others. This is a system, and the outcomes of juvenile justice are reflective of that system. It includes both county partners and private providers, and Senator Westland is absolutely right that these are issues that really must be addressed. And I thank the committee for their attention and your support for the authority. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jester. And I just wanted to let the committee know that on Monday we'll be doing a work session on the Oregon State Police budget, and on Wednesday the military budget. So please be here promptly, and we'll have, at least as far as now, no meeting on Tuesday. This meeting is adjourned.